The Guardian.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Today, more cup upsets than tea with Scott Carson. Man United Liverpool at Old Trafford. Fans cheer return of the man behind so many triumphs. And Howard Webb doesn't disappoint. Meantime for Liverpool, Kenny Dalglish in at the deep end with the pull. But can King Kenny turn team around in time for their visit to the Tangerines? Elsewhere, Newcastle down by Stevenage downed by own fans, and Chelsea plough on past Tractor Boys back in the gold. We round up the action, look at the Carling Cup semis, and get the latest from Europe. Italy, where there have been two whole rounds since we last talked, Leonardo debuts, Cassano at Milan too, and Spain, where there's controversy for Mourinho. Yeah, really, all of that in today's Football Weekly. On board today, Barney Rone.
Hello, James.
Hi, Barney. Good morning to you. Greg Ruffley.
Hi, James.
Hi, Greg. And congratulations, Paolo Bandini.
Hello. Thank you, James.
You're off to Las Vegas.
I am. Not too long.
But more on that later. Now, FA Cup, Liverpool, the big game at Old Trafford. Before that, the big decision. Greg Ruffley, Roy on his way, King Kenny back. Are you happy? Is it a wise move?
Yeah, I think it was a no-brainer for NESV. I think the situation was only going to get much worse under Roy Hodgson. And I think there's been a lot of people who've criticised the fans for chanting for Dalglish and wanting him back at the club when he's been out of the game for so long. But I think that's to misunderstand Liverpool and what Dalglish means for fans and for the club. I just think it can't get any worse under Dalglish than it was under Hodgson. And in fact, just his presence at the club now will mean that results will improve.
Well, I
just think you'll see so much more effort from the players. I just think they know what Dalglish means, and they know what it means for the fans. And I just think that kind of atmosphere at the club will improve things dramatically. I think financially.
How long is that going to last, really? I mean, why weren't these players who were paid a lot of money running around to the same degree for the other manager? Isn't that shortchanging the fans? I mean, is that really how it works?
You're not
happy with Roy Hodgson, so you're not going to run around.
I do think that's how it works. Yeah, I do think players these days are like that. And for somebody like Dalglish to come in and offer just some optimism, and to see how that affects the fans, I do think that will affect how players are. And also, I think NESV can't lose, because financially we're going to sell out now for the rest of the season. I think like the fans will come like it's a tourist trip. They'll want to see Dalglish one more time as manager of Liverpool. I honestly think they will. And then I also think if things don't go as well as NESV want them to, they can turn around and say, well, we'll listen to the fans, and it maybe didn't work out, and now we're going to do things our way.
I agree with Greg. I think for a club like Liverpool, it's really important to just make the place feel better again.
And the one thing with Dalglish, one last thing, I think the fact that he held the club together through Hillsborough and he went to all these funerals, and what he took on as a personal toll for himself, means that the fans appreciate more than ever that he's going to get one little last crack at being a Liverpool manager. And the Europa League takes on a whole new significance now. And to see Kenny Dalglish lift a trophy again with Liverpool after what he went through would be amazing, I think.
Did you see them running around? Did they seem to be more inspired and feeling good at Old Trafford?
I thought they did under quite very difficult circumstances, particularly when went down to 10 men. And I thought Dalglish's substitutions were quite positive. He made them early, and he didn't worry about reputation. He took off Morelos early on, I thought he was okay in the first half, but had a very disappointing start to the second half, and immediately made the change and put Jonjo Shelvey on, which was a bit of an eyebrow raiser. And he came on, and I thought he played really well. His passing was pretty sharp. He got around the pitch a lot quicker than Morelos was, and made an impact. And then when Babel came on as well, it was like someone had shot him up the arse. He was shooting around everywhere, and I don't know, he looked like he actually thought this is a chance to stay at the club now,
right?
Rather than just eke out his contract and leave, you know.
Barney, do you think there's any chance King Kenny had shot him up the arse, given that he's no stranger to rough stuff?
Well, he's certainly aware of some of his players' fighting qualities, and hopefully he can. He
what
can
are you talking about, Barney?
Nothing.
Spell it out. He was there, wasn't he, at the Lounge Inn in Southport?
Yeah, he was there earlier in the evening, and he did give evidence in Stephen Gerrard's favour, but that's got nothing to do with it, really.
Did you just say Stephen Gerrard?
He was found innocent in a court of law.
That's right. What about his guilty verdict from Howard Webb? And that two-footed challenge will see him miss the next three games.
I think it was a real shame he was sent off for that. I mean, it was a bad tackle, but I think you could have gone the other way. He should have been doing it, but I mean, I take a slightly more lenient view on these things.
He's not that type of player, is he?
Well, he may well. He's the type of player who tackles like that, but whether
that's what Ferguson said. He's not that type of player.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He did. Yeah. Which is nearly as good as Theo Walcott saying, "I'm not that type of player" after his dive for
Didn't
Arsenal.
Theo Walcott say, "I am that type of player"? Everybody, I am bad.
No,
I'm dangerous.
I think he was pleading his innocence. I don't know if we're going to get into this later with the Newcastle game. Me and Barney were sort of discussing before the game, before we came in here. I actually didn't see. It's pretty much the one FA Cup game that was televised this weekend that I didn't see was the United Liverpool game, but I did see the Tiote challenge for Newcastle against Stevenage, which I thought was outrageous and very much serving of a red card. And yet Barney disagreed with me, so I don't know if it's the same thing or not with Gerrard. I've only seen a slightly grainy YouTube clip, so I'm not sure if it's
it wasn't outrageous. It wasn't like he was deliberately going out. It was over the top. It was too enthusiastic. But I think he could have just about got away with not sending him off, and that would have been good for the.
I think a lot of these challenges would have been yellow cards before Eduardo and. After Eduardo, now these cards are red cards.
What about the penalty 30 seconds into the game?
It was soft, very soft, I thought. But I couldn't understand why Howard Webb gave it, because he was looking at it. If you look at where Howard Webb was in position, he was looking at it from the side, and he just saw Agger's legs swing slightly, and it looked like he actually kicked him up in the air. But you look at it from another angle, and his knee kind of grazed against Berbatov's, and then Berbatov went down.
Without discussing the merits of this individual, isn't that now an extraordinary number of penalties Howard Webb has given to United in games against Liverpool in the recent games he's officiated against them? I'm sure it's something someone posted on Twitter, and I unfortunately didn't write it down.
6 in 8.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Ryan Babel's tweet.
Yeah, it wasn't Ryan Babel who posted that. He's posted a picture of Howard Webb in a Man United shirt. So.
Yeah, and facing discipline as a result. Well, there you go. Have we said enough about Kenny Dalglish's return? It's pretty momentous stuff.
Yeah.
It was a difficult way to debut, but then I guess this match was less important than perhaps a Premier League game would be at the moment. Is that right, Greg?
I think the league league is everything now, from the Europa League as well, but that's that's the thing that is aside, which I think a lot of fans will hope to get some glory in.
He's going to do okay, though, isn't he? Because I don't think the players are as bad as they certainly looked in some of the games. I don't think the squad's... I know there's lots of dead wood, but if you could just tweak it a little bit, I think there's the basis of a good team still there, and I think they can improve.
Right.
The priorities are a centre-forward and a left-sided player. I think they're the two priorities. I think if they can bring players in, a centre-forward and a left-sided player, and whether Dalglish has any say over those players are going to...
Well,
this is it,
players.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure... The one thing about Dalglish is I'm sure he's accepted the position and come in and just said, yeah, I'll do the job no matter what. And when he gets in, he'll try and exert his influence. I'm sure he'll try and exert his influence from now until June. And as much as it might be a temporary thing and he might be gone in June no matter what, I think... Just from his point of view, for having pride in your work and what you do, he will want this to be permanent himself.
Right.
I like him because he's got a really gloomy face as well. I also have a slightly gloomy face. I think people often assume he's a bit more gloomy than he is just because of the way his face... It's good when you're winning. It looks like you're really inscrutable.
He's Scottish as well.
When things go wrong, it's because he's too gloomy.
It's nice to have another Scot back as a manager, you know. Yeah. And also, just the fact that he seems to be he's in Liverpool's corner. Yesterday he was ranting and raving after the match, which is what I think a lot of Liverpool fans want to see.
His managerial role models are Bob Paisley and Jock Steen. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that or any more progressive than that. I mean, you know, these were the first of the real sort of modern managers. A bit of Steen and a bit of Paisley and he'll be fine.
Right. Rollet the Roisin or something along those lines says, Roy Hodgson, was he the worst pool manager since Barrymore? That's potentially litigious. where is Roy now? Is this... you know, is he going to have to go to a championship team? Will he be in Norway by the time you hear this?
I'm sure he'll get a job. I mean, he's one of those managers, isn't he? Always in work.
You picture him, Barney, though, don't you? cracking his lonely boiled egg this morning.
In Croydon somewhere.
In Croydon, in a shed somewhere.
Poor Roy.
He'll be West Ham's next manager.
Do you think?
I think Jacob Steinberg said he wants him to be West Ham's new manager.
Well, if Jacob Steinberg wants him...
Yeah, he will become West Ham's next manager, obviously.
Is Steve Clarke going to be joining Kilkenny?
It looks that way, yeah.
Does it?
And I think that would be the bridge that maybe Dalglish needs to, you know, this 10-year gap that he's had out of the game. Steve Clarke's been working with Mourinho and seeing how modern-day tactics work.
How long has Steve Clarke been out of the game?
10 months? That's fair dues, isn't it? He seems to... I mean, his stock's quite high, Steve Clarke. Yeah. He can understand Dalglish and he can translate for the foreign players in the dressing room, so I mean, it's got to be an advantage.
His arrival at West Ham was seen as very much the key to... What the good things that happened at Upton Park under Zola's tenure. But there you go. No Steven Gerrard on account of that red card for the next three games, which begin Wednesday night with the rescheduled clash at Bloomfield Road with Blackpool.
Well, I've seen it suggested that you know in some ways could be of benefit, which I think is obviously a bit contentious because Gerrard's an important player because it'll allow Morelos to play in the middle where obviously he's a bit more comfortable than where he has been playing out wide on the right.
What kind of manager is Dalglish? I can't really remember. Is he an attacking manager? I mean, I seem to remember him having success with strikers at Blackburn.
He played two styles of football. At Liverpool, it was all pass and move. It was lots of short, triangular passing, and five-a-sides in training. But at Blackburn, and I was at Blackburn as a youth player when Dalglish was the manager.
Right man to ask.
Greg Kenny was your manager.
He actually managed for one match against the Republic of Ireland under-15s, and I was a substitute, and I came on at half-time, and he spoke to me at half-time, and I think that's why I had such a bad game.
Do you understand?
Because I went dizzy with the excitement that Kenny Dalglish had spoke to me, and he said, "Super sub, you're coming on." And I was like, "Oh my God, I'm not a super sub, Kenny." And I came on, and I played right midfield, which was my position, and after about 5 minutes, the right-back got injured, and I got put back to right back, and I'd never played there in my life before. And Damien Duff was on the left wing for Ireland, and absolutely tore me a new one. And then I was.
What did he say when you came off then?
He didn't say anything. But about 2 weeks later, I turned up at training and got pulled into the office, and it wasn't Dalglish who pulled me into the office, it was some other guy, I can't remember his name. I thought I was actually going to get offered a contract as an apprentice, and he just said, "Son, you've got lots of ability, but I'm afraid we're going to let you go." And then I ended up at Marine in non-league. So, and then I left and played Sunday League. And as you can tell, you know, I'm going from strength to strength now, aren't I? Talking about my past glories.
Greg, that's an amazing story.
Yeah.
So how would you sum up?
Anyway, that is your style at Blackburn. Yeah. He played... he played a lot of diagonal balls from fullback. He was actually direct football. He wasn't at all what he played at Liverpool. He played these direct balls, and the he used to tell us to do this at training, was the fullback playing a direct ball up to the James Beattie figure, which was Alan Shearer or Chris Sutton in the first team, but at youth level it was actually James Beattie, and he would nod it down to whoever the second striker was, and it was just direct football. And he had very good wingers as well, or he used the wingers a lot. It was like Jason Wilcutch.
So it sounds like he's adaptable. Which tactic do you think he would find most conducive to success with his current batch of players?
The current batch of players, I think away at Blackburn, he might try
to
and mix. At Blackpool, he might try.
It's tough to get over that.
Yeah, it is. He might try and mix the two styles because I think sometimes in a game like that where you're going to be pressed heavily by the opposition, you can't just play the free flowing football, particularly if they've not got the players to do that. Just one other thing though, I just thought at the weekend that it was nice to see Martin Kelly play at right back instead of Glenn Johnson, and that Liverpool played a lot better with like a chugger at right back rather than someone who bombs forward a bit more.
Right, they were probably saying that windy day so many years ago.
Yeah.
Who else was in that team, Greg?
Well, there was in the team against Ireland. It was very difficult because it being like there was a lot of Northwest based players like me who were at Blackburn at the time, and because Blackburn were becoming a force in the Premier League, there was a lot more interest from in players around the country. And the likes of John Curtis, I think, played in that game, who was touted to be an England international. Yeah, and also he was a year younger than me at the time. There was David Dunn, who was particularly lauded by those.
Whatever
around.
Happened to him?
God, tell you what, he was an arrogant sod. He loved himself, and he's but that's what you need to. He's a very good player, and he's suffered from injuries. One of them, which I gave him when I was playing for Marine Youth against Blackburn. Went down his Achilles and he was out for a few months.
Fantastic. Fantastic, Greg. Thank you so much for that. Ian Holloway is very excited about this clash. He asked Kenny Dalglish for his autograph once after being fired. I can't remember which. Was it the Leicester job he'd just been fired by? And Kenny told him to F off. He didn't want his effing autograph. But he says it doesn't matter. He's like, he's got his book on audio, an audio book of Kenny's, we're not sure whether the autobiography is saying.
Kenny reading his own autobiography.
Hopefully it's not Kenny wow. reading himself. But yeah, he's very up for it, says Ian Holloway.
Hmm.
Except in an Ian Holloway accent. That seems to be it for part one. Part two awaits, listeners. Now, elsewhere in FA Cup land, Chelsea beat Ipswich 7-0. That's more like it, isn't it?
Not bad.
Not bad, eh? I'm guessing, from the blank looks around me, nobody actually saw this game, listeners. I'll move on.
I was at Spurs-Charlton.
Of course you were. And did you enjoy that?
Yeah, it was a really good game, actually. Spurs were brilliant for 10 minutes when Luka Modric came on to start the second half, and he was absolutely fantastic.
Mm.
He's such a good player. I mean, he's no Diego Maradona, but there's something in the way he runs with the ball, looking up, ball glued to his foot, that just makes you think of Diego Maradona a little bit. And he was brilliant. And
what about the pink booted fellow?
Yeah, there was Andros Townsend making his debut on the right wing, where David Beckham might have been standing later in the month, and might yet be, actually, if things go right. And he scored a debut goal, and he looked quite good. And, you know, you kind of think it would be quite nice to have a kid like that getting a chance rather than Beckham coming in and playing a few games over 2 or 3 months.
Mm. Interesting. Going back, though, to Chelsea, 7-0. That's more like it, isn't it?
Ipswich had just sacked their manager, though, hadn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, it's terrible timing, sacking your manager before you go to Stamford Bridge.
It is very terrible.
Good timing for Roy Keane.
Earl of Brigham says, can the team comment on Marcus Evans, the owner of Ipswich Town? He's a couple of Kevin Bacon slices away from Nicholas Van Hoogstraten, yet he seems to be avoiding any flack.
Paul Jewell would be a good appointment, though, won't he, if that goes through, I would have thought.
Yeah.
He's got an experience of taking a club from the Championship into the Premier League and keeping them there, and a club of probably, you know, less stature than Ipswich, so...
Right.
I mean, I don't know. I don't think... maybe the criticism's unfair.
Well, producer Ben says he's also got experience of getting them relegated with the lowest ever points total in the Premier League. But then, you know, why bring that up? Yeah, well, Paul Jewell, that'll be interesting. He will be in the stands as an observer still, apparently, this midweek when they host Arsenal in the Carling Cup semi-finals. They've snuck that one in, haven't they? The Carling Cup semi-finals this midweek. Ipswich are hosting Arsenal in the other semi-final. Remember, there's a place in Europe at the end of this for somebody. It will be West Ham against Birmingham.
Yeah. I mean, Arsenal are strong favourites for it, aren't they?
Well,
they've taken it better. Yeah,
they want to win it. They want a trophy.
All right. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Paolo?
Well, I don't know if we're going to come on to Arsenal soon.
Yeah, let's come on to them now.
I thought it was just an interesting position they were in at 1-0 down against Leeds, because obviously... especially late in the game, you're talking about replay, which is what they've ended up getting, and you talk about fixture congestion or problems it's going to bring. And obviously for years, the last couple of years at Arsenal, that's been an increasing issue of, well, we've got to win a trophy, we've got to win a trophy and get that out of the system, this not having won a trophy for 5 years. But with the Carling Cup so close, I did almost wonder to myself, actually, wouldn't these players be better off letting this one slide to Leeds and then giving themselves, you know, go and win the Carling Cup and that way you get your trophy situation out of the way. And then you can worry about, because they are still involved in the title race, even though it is, you know, I think Man United to lose rather than...
Hasn't the problem been picking and choosing which games you want to win and that throws your season off? I mean, you don't want to go back into that, try and win every match. Yeah?
I think that's probably true, but I think perhaps that ship had already sailed when he picked those nine, you know, he made nine changes to the squad to the start of the game against Leeds, and then you put yourself in that hole, and then is it worth it
now?
What they had
Spurs
to do?
Did the same, nine changes. I mean, that's just what happened. They still want to win, though.
Yeah.
They still think that's a good enough team to win.
What about Leeds?
Leeds were really impressive. Leeds were, you know, I mean, everyone, of course, now is highlighting the pairing of Alex Bruce and Kasper Schmeichel, sort of you know, the two old tormentors of Manchester United against Arsenal. And two guys who actually, you know, I hadn't realised this before. I was reading a bit about it before the weekend, but they used to play, you know, as kids together, obviously, having been sons of those two players. It was an impressive performance by Leeds. I thought they were first half very dogged. I did think that Arsenal really sort of lacked something in creativity when you had Arshavin, who's just in a terrible moment of form at the moment, and obviously Ben there isn't a right winger. It doesn't matter you know, how many times you try it, he's not going to be a right winger. He really slows the play down when you go through him on the right, and his crossing really isn't up to scratch. Actually, he was probably more incisive than Shamak when he drifted inside. Shamak didn't have a great game, but it really felt like in the first half they did a very good job of just closing down the spaces, not giving Arsenal room to play. In the second half, Arsenal did create the chances, but you're giving me an absolute
credulous
look.
No, I asked about Leeds, but that's okay.
No, but that's what I was saying. Leeds did a good job of closing down the space and not allowing them that room to play. Right, yeah. In the second half, I mean, actually, if you look at it after they'd scored that goal, it was only a fantastic save from Szczesny that stopped them from winning it altogether with Becchio's header. So
Szczesny, who used to be a beekeeper.
Did he?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Right, well, he was in goal for Brentford.
Oh, okay. So,
hey!
Are you pleased to see the Bruce family doing well?
Yeah.
Bruce progenies.
Yeah, very much so. I watched that game with interest.
Yeah.
I just said, I thought Andy O'Brien had a really good game for Leeds, and he's been a very good signing, an astute signing. He's been a bit of a journeyman in the Premier League and in the Championship, and he's pitched up at Leeds now, and I thought him and Bruce were really good for Leeds.
Yeah, pairing off of
that. Yeah, they just kind of locked down Shamak.
It's good having an FA Cup replay, Arsenal-Leeds, isn't it? I love it. Well, we want a third or fourth replay, like it's 1971. They're all going to punch each other and just keep on playing each other constantly.
Ooh, Barney. That brings us on nicely to the hard-hitting action at Stevenage.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, first of all, a 3-1 win for Stevenage against Newcastle. Alan Pardew saying, sorry, everyone, we were very tired, which, you know, can happen. Mm. And perhaps they underestimated their opponents a bit. But League Two, recently promoted to League Two Stevenage, what a result for them. But why? Why did the fan ruin it at the end by running up and punching one of their own players? What's the story?
Well, given that it's an open case, I probably wouldn't want to speculate too much. But he came onto the pitch. The word is that he approached several players before punching this one player. Supposed to be the case that his father was supposed to have said last night that he was going to hand himself in.
He's
this
not
morning.
That kind of supporter.
So I'm sure we'll find out the truth of the matter
Has
before very long.
Has anyone seen the video?
I've
seen the video, and the guy looks like he's dressed to go out to Shades nightclub or something, you know. And he's got these like shiny shoes on and quite tight
fitting
jeans.
Maybe he went on somewhere afterwards.
Quite a disgusting t-shirt and he does look like he's on a dance floor or something. With a scarf waving around his head. And I wonder if the...
What club do you go to?
I would like to say the Lounge Inn, you know. Yeah.
Don't go there.
No, well, I already have been, you know, anyway.
I was going to say, I really like the way the Stevenage manager described it afterwards, that it was part of the action. He said, well, you know, unfortunately, the lad's come in from the side, he's caught him with a right hander, he's gone down. And so this was just an extension of the game rather than...
Well, yeah, he said, we all take knocks in football. Part of the game. Fantastic.
But it's kind of the magic of the cup, isn't it? Yeah. It's 1 minute you're up, the next you're down, the football will turn around and bite you back. And maybe it'd be, you know, every single Premier League player should be thoroughly punched after a game now and then. It might bring everybody.
El Hadji Diouf would be quite a contender after this weekend, wouldn't he?
What did he do lining up for him?
After Jamie Mackie had just had his leg
this
broken.
This is Blackburn QPR.
Yeah, Blackburn QPR. Jamie Mackie's just had his leg broken in two places. And Diouf, the, you know, lovely guy that he is, walks up to him. And this is what Jamie Mackie has tweeted. Presumably tweeted from a stretcher with his leg in two pieces. He said, proper disappointed that El Hadji Diouf was in my ear while I'm on the deck with a broken leg, saying, fuck you and fuck your leg. I mean, that's just disgraceful. For anybody to do that.
Neil Warnock called him a sewer rat.
Yeah, and for once, a lot of people would agree with Neil Warnock, I think, after seeing the incident. And I think Neil Warnock said afterwards that a lady from the Blackburn staff came in and apologised afterwards, which, I mean, why send a lady? I mean, they should have got onto the youth and said, listen, go in there and apologise, or, you know, you're getting your wages fined, or it's going to bomb you out, because... I mean, I think it's disgraceful.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I don't want to leave that Stevenage game behind because we've done the post game bit, but without making proper mention of the fact that Stevenage fully deserved to beat Newcastle. You know, there's a League Two team who completely outplayed them in the second half. To be honest with you, the first half was pretty dull towards the end of it, but that was because Stevenage were playing as you would expect. You know, it was classic. You know, lesser ability side, I guess, approached the game at the beginning, which was just closed down at really high speed, and they're just constantly harassing Newcastle. Newcastle seem to have no better ideas than hoof the ball long to Leon Best, who, you know, isn't Andy Carroll when it comes to taking down those sorts of balls. In the second half, you know, Stevenage, they got that goal, which was a bit fortuitous, you know, a lot fortuitous, really. It took a huge deflection from off Williamson. It was going a long way wide. But after that, they just kept coming at Newcastle. And, you know, they had Bostwick's goal was a cracking goal, but just generally, they were just streaming forwards and very much deserved it. And when Joey Barton got that goal I think it was the beginning of injury time, which was an absolute screamer, by the way, it came so far out of nowhere. And you thought, oh, hang on, Newcastle might equalise here. And if they had, it would have been an absolute travesty, because Stevenage outplayed them.
The Newcastle wanted to win his proper cup upset. Pardew looked like super hands from Peep Show, as he always does at the end, but he looked properly upset at the end.
Well, he's still not exactly on firm enough footing there yet to take things lightly. You know, he's not loved by the home support, who are still a bit dubious of the decision to get rid of Houghton, so he can't just sort of brush it off like other managers might be able to and say, oh,
yeah, he really wanted to win that game, you know, look at the team and everything.
All right, and finally on the FA Cup theme, Leicester Man City, that exciting reunion of Mancini with Leicester, Sven with Man City, and Sven and Roberto with each other. 2-2. Sol Bamba proving a little bit too much for Man City to handle, eh?
It was a brilliant game. Of course, most reports I've read this morning seem to have gone down the well. You don't expect that from Italian football managers kind of route, because it was a very open game. But it was a very entertaining fair.
All right, and they get to do it all over again at Eastlands, and the winner gets to go to Notts County, which, if it was Sven, is going to be another reunion. That's very exciting. In other fourth round draw news, Southampton will be facing Reading. Chelsea will travel to Everton. Spurs have been drawn away to Fulham. Crawley, who are the remaining non-league side, get Torquay if they beat Derby County. That's today, I think, isn't it? That game, yeah. Arsenal have to play Leeds, but then whoever goes through from that hosts Huddersfield Town. And you've got a couple of Premier League meetings in there as well. Aston Villa, Blackburn Rovers, Bolton Wanderers are at home to Wigan. That's enough on that topic now, though, hey, when there's a wide world of continental football awaiting, starting in Madrid with Sid. Sid Lowe in Spain.
James Richardson in near Earth orbit.
Absolutely right. Guilty as charged, Sid. Now, what's been happening in the crazy world of the Liga?
Well, I wanted to start. You almost feel like starting with the guess what Real Madrid and Barcelona won again.
Yeah.
But Real Madrid, it felt for a while like they really weren't going to. I thought they got totally torn apart in the first half yesterday against Villarreal, who are a genuinely good side. And it's true that, I know we've talked about this quite a lot, about the difference in level between the top two clubs in Spain and the rest of the clubs in Spain, and to what extent could they go away to Stoke and all the rest of it, and is the rest of the Spanish league good enough? A lot of it isn't, but three or four teams in it are, and Villarreal are a fantastically good side, and I really did think that they took Real Madrid apart in the first half yesterday. Somehow Madrid went into the break 2-2, and tragically as well, when that happened, you knew it was all over, and you knew Real Madrid would end up winning it.
Yeah, and then, Sid, there was the usual Mourinho controversy.
Yeah, there was. Mourinho celebrated one of the goals by racing over and celebrating with the fans and behind the Villarreal bench and doing it very kind of aggressively and punching the air and very pleased with himself. Now, obviously, on the first hand, you could say, well, he was right to feel like that because his team had been right up against it. They'd come back. They'd fought back pretty well. Cristiano Ronaldo was spectacularly good last night. And they went a little bit crazy, some of the people on the Villarreal bench. They thought it was a lack of respect. One of the Villarreal players, Cani, threw a bottle at Jose Mourinho. I mean, I think he went to throw it, then decided against it, and in the end just kind of sort of looked it up at Mourinho. So it wasn't thrown at him particularly hard. It wasn't thrown at his head, but he did throw a bottle at Mourinho and was given a red card for that. Mourinho said after the game that the reason for this was that his son was sitting behind the away bench and he wanted to go and celebrate with his son and celebrate this fight back with his son and you know, wave at him and all the rest of it. Now, that obviously posed one very obvious question. Isn't it time to put your son somewhere else in the stadium?
Yeah, indeed. There you go. Barcelona, as you say, also were victorious. A great free kick from Leo Messi.
Yeah, and it was one of those free kicks where rather than curling it and hitting it hard and wondering if it will drop in time, it was Messi saying, should I take a free kick as if it was a pass? And you just pass the ball into the net for a free kick. I think, once again, answering one of those things that's levelled at Messi, oh, he's not as complete as Cristiano Ronaldo, he can't take free kicks. Yeah, actually, he can.
Yeah, indeed so. Listen, any other sort of stuff I'm wondering about? Malaga, for example, their trolley dash of transfers in this January window, has that been continuing?
Well, what's happened is they're up to five at the moment, but only four could play at the weekend. They actually lost a 1-0 lead and drew 1-1 with a last-minute equaliser from Athletic Bilbao. Julio Baptista wasn't able to play because his international transfer didn't come through in time. Right. But they're on five now. They're trying to get some more. The Adebayor thing seems to have gone very quiet, which I must admit I'm surprised about, because when I was told about it last week, it's very much being talked about down in Malaga as this is very close. We're talking 2 or 3 hours away rather than a couple of days. Nothing's happened, which makes me think that Adebayor is waiting for something else or hanging on to something else rather than trying to force that deal through. The other person that's being talked about a lot at the moment is Diogo Bonanotte, who plays in Argentina with River Plate, and that may well be the next stop for Malaga, but they do keep on buying. It's going to be pretty entertaining between now and then this season, I think.
Sid, how are they regarded? Is their arrival on the scene and their proclamations of being able to challenge Real Madrid and Barcelona in the space of 2 or 3 seasons, is that regarded as a breath of fresh air in the Liga duopoly? Or do they get the same kind of opprobrium, the same kind of nouveau opprobrium that, say, Man City are facing in their current massively, all comes to a grinding halt, listeners? Yeah, answer, Sid.
I'd answer if there was a question to answer. Do they get the? Well, I mean, in a way, it falls between the two things. The first thing to say is that the dominance of Madrid and Barcelona, not just in terms of, you know, the fan base and all the rest of it, but in particular in terms of the media agenda, is so huge that in a way, no one cares about Malaga enough to attack them for this. No one cares about them enough to say, oh, isn't this terrible, these nouveau riche? The other thing to bear in mind is that they haven't yet been successful. In fact, they've been desperately unsuccessful so far, which is why they're buying so many more players during this winter transfer window. So until such a time as they actually genuinely challenge Madrid or Barcelona, they're not going to be on the media agenda. There has been a certain degree of curiosity. There has been a certain degree of excitement. There's not been too much of people saying this is a disgrace, that where it's taking football. Not yet, at least. But I suspect that if they were to start winning and if they were to start challenging the big two in any kind of meaningful way, then of course that would happen. The truth is, unfortunately, that any club that's not Madrid or Barcelona just doesn't get talked about with a kind of volume of interest that would happen in England.
Part 3, Paolo Bandini. Vegas-based listeners will be excited to know that Paolo is celebrating his nuptials with Ms. Bandini. I mean, Mrs. She will at the future. Not She's not at the
she's
moment.
She's not currently Bandini, otherwise that would be a
Appalachian nightmare.
Yeah.
That's the sort of thing that happens in rural communities, isn't it?
Yep. Yeah. All right, then. Anyway, yes, congratulations,
Thank
Paolo.
Thank you, James.
Who's the lovely lady?
I'm not sure if you want to be outed on national podcasting broadcast. I'm not sure.
All right. I appreciate your discretion. I bet she does too. All right. Just a word or two about this Green Day impersonator that you're having for the ceremony.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why?
Because Laura and I, first met at age 15, have since that time long been Green Day fans.
Right.
So it seemed like an appropriate thing to
it
do.
It certainly does to me, too. I'm curious more than anything to know what Green Day song you're going to have at that special moment.
Well, apparently we get 2 songs, but we haven't submitted them yet, so we'll have to have a think about it.
I was under the impression you were single about 3 years ago. You met when you were 15.
We met when we were 15. We haven't been together that whole time. I'm really not sure that the podcasting audience need to hear the full details of...
How did you meet as 15-year-olds?
We met on holiday.
Where?
Anywhere nice?
We met... I'm really not sure that...
Was it a disco with a Greek guy?
No, it was in England. It was at a holiday camp, because even at that age, we were both still being dispatched by our parents, who obviously wanted to have some time to themselves in the summer.
If only they knew what their kids were getting up to.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Sorry, Greg.
No, she's from Widnes, isn't she?
She is from Widnes, yeah.
No, it's not Mel C, is it?
No, it's not Mel C. I believe she went to school with one of Mel C's siblings, actually.
So close, Greg.
Yeah. Mm.
Close. As long as it's not Time of Your Life. That's all I'm
saying.
Would
that upset you, James?
Well, it's more for you. I'm not going to be there, I'm guessing, since I haven't got an invitation.
Well, I didn't want to deprive the listeners of BBC South your expertise. So, obviously, right. If we'd invited you, you'd have had to come away in the middle of the season. It would have been awkward for everyone. So,
viewers, Paolo, viewers.
Viewers, I apologise. I'm sorry.
This is TV. It's the big time.
Yeah. Some people might be listening while they're in the kitchen doing something.
That is true, Paolo. Yeah. Paolo Bandini, two whole rounds of Serie A action since we last spoke. And my word, so much has been happening. First of all, where do you want to start?
Do you know, it's funny, so much happened this weekend that I'm struggling now to cast my mind back as far as Thursday, which feels like a million miles away.
Well, Leonardo made his debut,
yeah,
of course.
It was quite eventful on Thursday, not quite as far as this weekend was. But yeah, we had Leonardo's debut. Which he won.
3-1 against Napoli. What did you make of them?
I was impressed with Inter, and it was something that I'd been saying a little bit before he made his debut, was that perhaps he was the right manager now for Inter. And a lot of people have been very sceptical of this appointment because he's not necessarily someone with a great experience. He's not necessarily someone who's got a history he's got a history of nothing really in coaching. He's got that 1 year at Milan in which he did so-so. But I think that perhaps that's really what Inter need right now, is not someone to come in and talk tactics with them and be really detailed about what they need to do, because this is a team of players that won 5 trophies in the last calendar year. They don't need that. All they need is to be pepped up again in the way that Mourinho used to pep them up, and Benitez, I think, didn't. And I think that he's not the same as Mourinho, Leonardo, but he's in a different way done a very good job of that, in that he's come in and under Benitez it was quite a cold atmosphere. It was quite sort of, he's going to be quite scholarly, Benitez. He's a bit standoffish, whereas Leonardo's come in, he's all smiles and he's got his arms around everybody, and he's made everyone feel optimistic again, and that's sort of got the ball rolling and they've been able to play better football.
It's interesting at the San Siro on Thursday how all the players after the goals came racing over to celebrate with him, which was quite significant. Also, stories circulating that Mourinho has been very visibly kind of on Leonardo's side, texted him a good luck message, and apparently texted the players as well, some kind of be good to Leonardo.
Well, Leonardo and Mourinho sort of did actually get on quite well, even when Leonardo was coach of Milan, they were on opposite benches. But actually, I think Leonardo's done something really clever here, in that I think if you look at the people who succeeded Mourinho at Porto, at Chelsea, and obviously in Benitez at Inter, I think most of them have really tried to sort of go, okay, well, he's gone now and I'm here and I'm my man and I'm going to impose my own way of doing things. And it's not worked for anybody. I mean, you look at Porto, went through 3 coaches in a season after Mourinho left. Chelsea, we all know that, the difficulties they've had for filling his boots. And I think what Leonardo did is he called him as soon as he got the appointment. He called Mourinho and spoke to him about what needed to be done. His opening press conference, before any journalist could put to him the name Mourinho, he was like, listen, I want to, I'm not Mourinho, but I love what Mourinho's done here. You can feel his atmosphere everywhere. It's brilliant. And he's been sort of embracing it rather than fighting against it. And yes, now Mourinho is obviously texting him and talking to him. Mourinho said the other day, he's driving it, but I'm there in the back seat. So, I mean, I think some managers would really struggle with that, and I think they would find it oppressive. But I think, again, Leonardo, being this coach who hasn't got this great history behind him, hasn't got this experience, he's kind of happy just to be the man who's providing that kick and that optimism, and letting the players be delighted about the fact that Mourinho's there. Because there's a story that went around in Gazetta when Benitez first arrived, that Benitez had asked for a picture of Mourinho to be taken down at the Piano Gentile training ground, at Pinatina, and actually Moratti came out afterwards and said no, he didn't ask for that to be taken down. We took it down because we knew that Benitez felt, Mourinho's presence. We knew they weren't good friends and we knew he wasn't that happy about it. But, with Leonardo, it's the opposite. It's no longer like anyone has to be ashamed that Benitez was there before, sorry, that Mourinho was there beforehand, or has to keep quiet about it. It's like, this is the team that Mourinho built.
Well, they had another win at the weekend. They came back from a goal down away to Catania. A little bit of a lucky result, that, for them. But they're closing in on Milan. And Leonardo, lovely bloke though he is, you do wonder if there's a bit of a backstory here with Berlusconi, the man who sacked his lovely suave Brazilian bottom last season, calling him pig-headed, amongst other things. And now Leonardo with Inter could be the man to snatch away that long-awaited title just when it seemed in Milan's grasp.
I mean, it's still a long way to go, but if they win their games in hand now, so if you added the 6 points, assuming they were 22 games in hand now, Inter would already only be 5 points behind, which feels like a massive leap back from where they were, 16 points behind when they kicked off on Thursday.
Mind you, there's a new face at Milan as well, isn't there?
There is, Antonio Cassano, who... He showed up at their Dubai advertising expedition in the winter break. He showed up 2.5 kilos overweight. Even Ibrahimovic was sort of quoted like the day after he arrived, saying, "I think he needs to go on a little diet." But he's now played, you know, he played two games so far for Milan. Both of them he's come off the bench. The first one on Thursday, they were drawing 0-0 against
Cagliari.
Yeah, it was against Cagliari. And he came off the bench and set up the winning goal.
From Rodney Strasser.
For Rodney Strasser.
The man who Ibrahimovic tried to kick in the head.
Yeah. And who
apparently they're best mates, though.
Yeah, although Cassano threatened to punch him in the face afterwards in a joking, light-hearted way, because Strasser had said, yeah, I'm really good friends with Cassano, but I can't understand a word he's saying. Because, yeah. He has a very thick accent. And Cassano said, if you say that again, I'll punch you.
Yeah, probably.
But yeah, also there's an odd picture after that game of Cassano with a good handful of Strasser's bottom in quite a personal close-up way.
Hey.
This could be the start of a beautiful friendship.
It certainly could.
Sorry, right. Strasser.
If Cassano starts ordering donuts, then you need to start worrying.
He set up the winner that day, and Milan this weekend had an absurd 4-4 draw with Udinese, in which they were behind three times at home. But Cassano set up two of the goals then again, coming off the bench. Now he's been on the pitch in total for Milan for 45 minutes, and he set up three goals.
Yeah. Lovely equaliser by Ibrahimovic in the 90-whatever-it-was minute. Mm. Fantastic
stuff. Still only 28 as well, isn't he, Cassano? It seems like he's been around for forever and ever, and yet he's still in what you'd call like the peak age to be a footballer.
It's one of those things. Like, there was a picture someone sent around a few days ago of him. It was just him when he was a kid, sort of standing near Roberto Baggio, and it was just a picture of him when he was a mascot or something. But I think even then he had a sort of an old face. He sort of looks like he's been around the block, even at sort of age, 10 or whatever he is. He looks like he's seen the world. He's seen things that you'll never see. And he's still got that about him. But
attack ships and flames off the shores of Iran, etc. There you go. So that's all very exciting. Milan stumbling then at the weekend in that absolutely thrilling 4-4 with Udinese. Toto Di Natale, my word, what a legend he continues to be. Lazio losing at home to Lecce after their 0-0 with Genoa, so they're fading from the picture a bit. Napoli beating Juventus.
Yeah.
And Juve are in a rotten...
Yeah, two defeats by three goals in the space of...
3 days.
How many days is it between Thursday and Sunday? 4 days. I don't think it's a very, very long time since Juventus have suffered back-to-back defeats like that. And
right.
They were absolutely... Well, I was going to say they're blown away by Napoli. It's slightly unfair because
3-0.
What actually happened was they were 1-0 down and Luca Toni scored a goal that looked perfectly legitimate that would have been an equaliser that was disallowed. And after that, they were blown away. So it looked like they, perhaps that could have turned the game at that point. But Napoli, second place, 4 points behind Milan, capable of being brilliant. They looked awful on Thursday against Inter, to be honest with you. And then they came back and played really well against Juventus. So you don't always know where you are with them. But Edinson Cavani, crikey, what a player. He's runs that he's making, the goals he's scoring. He's obviously all three with his head, so a hat-trick of headers at the weekend. The third one, a diving header, was really well taken. I think he got some help from some very bad defending from Chiellini and Bonucci, which is a bit worrying from an Italian point of view, because those are supposedly, two pillars of the national team these days. But, it was, he's pretty much putting on a one-man show. It's him and Di Natale scoring an absurd amount of goals between them so far this season already.
Right. You just mentioned Luca Toni there. What's he doing in Turin?
Yeah, Luca Toni, who's showed up in Turin, on Thursday, Juventus' season was totally derailed because Fabio Quagliarella, who's been their top scorer this season, signed from Napoli in the summer, did his cruciate knee ligaments. A few days later, Luca Toni arrives from Genoa on a free transfer. Juventus have been very clear in saying we were already going to sign Luca Toni, and actually he's probably more likely to have been intended as a replacement for Amaury, who doesn't score goals anymore for the last sort of two seasons.
He'd certainly be a replacement for a player who
doesn't
score goals.
I think exactly. Luca Toni's had three goals in 15 games for Genoa. And it looks really bad for them now as well, because of course they let David Trezeguet go in the summer, who I believe is doing pretty well for Hercules.
8 goals in 15.
And they've got no replacement so far for Quagliarella. They're going to have to look into investing again. You would have thought in January, but the club is talking about not spending big money. They're not about to go and sort of throw huge money at it. And this could be the point where this whole season comes derailed. The season that looked like they might be okay backing, moving in the right direction. And it's interesting to note that for all the talk of optimism, for all talk of having the right people in now with Beppe Marotta doing the transfers and everything, and Gigi Del Neri hopefully being the coach who's going to restore them, I think they've now got a point less than at the same exactly the same stage last season when everyone was talking about it being a total crisis.
All right, so they're 9 points behind Milan there in the title race, and it's all getting very tasty, very tasty indeed. He thinks that's it then for today's Football Weekly. We'll be back on Thursday. In the meantime, it's many thanks to Barney Roney.
Cheers, James.
To Greg Ruffley.
Thanks, James.
And Paolo Bandini.
Thanks, James.
And producer Ben. And you, the listener. And listeners, by the way, It'd be churlish of me not to suggest that you suggest which Green Day song would be most appropriate for the nuptials in Vegas of Paolo and the lovely Mrs. Paolo to be, future, etc. Yeah, let us know. Post them in, and I'm sure Paolo will be delighted to have a plebiscite decide his tune of choice, his tune for this fella and his lady. All right, that's lovely. We'll be back later in the week. Have a super time till then.
It's something unpredictable, but in the end is right. I hope you had the time of your life.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.